Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
I said to the detective, and I get quite a different response when I say, look, I know that I bother you a lot. And I'm like, but this is my daughter. This is my oldest. I'm having a hard time going on without her. And I said, I just need something. And I said, and I know you have children. What if it was one of your children? And he's like, I get it. I'm so sorry. He's like, it's not like she's not on my mind. He's like, she is. And I think about my daughters. And this is always on my mind. He's like, I promise you. He's been very honest with me about like what he would do if he was a parent versus an officer. We have a good rapport.
On January 24th, 2022, 21-year-old Aiden Spear had plans to meet with her mother Jessica at 11 a.m. About 20 minutes before they were due to meet, Jessica received a message from Aiden stating that she had to go say goodbye to someone and that she would be a little late. She promised to call later and that she would meet with her, just not at the original time. Jessica never heard from her daughter again. At first, Jessica assumed that Aiden had just flaked on her, but the days continued to pass with no sign of her daughter. Then, Jessica began hearing from Aiden's friends that they hadn't heard from her either. Nearly a year later, Aiden is still missing, and Jessica is desperate to uncover the truth. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 373 of The Vanished, Aiden Spear's story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner, and it's great for my evening walks too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. Aiden Victoria Spear was born on July 5th, 2000. Jessica was a young mother trying to navigate being a first-time mom, but she adored Aiden and remembers those early days fondly.
I was 19 years old, and Aiden was born on July 5th, and she was 8 pounds, 9 ounces, and she was the best baby that I think there ever was. She was happy, and she didn't cry, and she was just adorable and spoiled and loved by both sides of her grandparents, and she was the best. I would have never imagined this. Her dad and I had been together, and then we were like on again, off again. And then when I found out that I was pregnant, we tried to work it out. Before I got married to my husband, I was single for a long time because, you know, the relationship with Aiden's dad ended up being pretty traumatic, and I was single for a very long time.
For a long time, it was just Jessica and Aiden. As Jessica mentioned, she later married and the two had a son together. We also spoke to Jessica's sister, Courtney, Aiden's aunt. She told us about her memories of Aiden's childhood.
I was pretty young when Aiden was born. And so my interactions with her, how I remember her mostly is as a little girl, or I knew her somewhat as a teenager, but she was kind of always awkward and shy. Aiden was sweet. She was always polite. She was really funny, and she was sarcastic. So as she got older, I didn't really know her. Of course, I went away to college. I moved away to Ohio, and then I eventually went to grad school in Washington, D.C., so I didn't have those interactions with her. You know, and then, of course, as a teenager, she moved away. We lived in Spokane, Washington, and they moved to Tacoma. or to the Seattle area.
No one knew it at the time, but this move from the eastern side of Washington State to Tacoma, about 300 miles away, seemed to change the trajectory of Aiden's life forever. Aiden struggled to fit in this new place. It was difficult for her to find new friends. Jessica explained that Aiden was bullied at school.
We moved to Tacoma, Washington from Spokane, and it was a little bit rougher of an area, and Aiden experienced bullying. And I remember just telling her that you just have to have a thick skin, and this happens to everybody, and she just really wanted to find people to fit in with. And so when she found people to fit in with, they were all the wrong people. She was in third grade, and so that was obviously fine at first. So she made some really good friends in third grade, and then she kept them, but they went to different schools because our house lines were where they went to the same elementary school, but they kind of split off for high school. And so she had this core group of really good friends until high school. And then she made a couple of friends, and they were good, and she did swim team, and she just got constantly bullied and picked on, and I noticed her friend group kind of changing. And it was like at that time when running away a lot started.
Jessica has a friend named Jeannie who also spoke with us. She's been by Jessica's side during the search for Aiden, helping in any way that she possibly can. Jeannie told us that they met when Aiden was younger.
So I know Aiden because her mom and I are really good friends. So I've known Jessica and her family for probably about 12, 13 years. So our husbands used to work together. They're in the glass industry and they worked at a shop together, and they actually became really close through their work together. And then through our husbands, Jessica and I met, and we haven't always been as close as we are now, but today I would consider her to be one of my best friends. So we actually have daughters who are very similar in age. So Aiden is just over a year older than my daughter. They spent some time together as youths. I think it would have been like on a Halloween when our kids were probably about 7 or 8. We took our daughters trick-or-treating together, and Jessica had just had her son who was a baby. So, you know, when she was younger, she was very sweet, kind, kind of soft-spoken. Her and my daughter were friends. They had gone camping together with their dads. But like I said, we weren't like super close when the kids were kids, but we've become a lot closer now. I guess what I would say is that, you know, Jessica and I became a lot closer kind of as Aiden was going through the majority of her problems. You know, my interactions with her kind of as a younger or an older teenager, like into adulthood, are definitely more limited. But because Jessica's my best friend, obviously, I take a very serious interest in the fact that she's missing, and I want to help Jessica in any way that I can.
Jessica could see that her daughter was struggling. Bullying is always a terrible thing for any parent to watch their child go through. You feel hopeless knowing that you can't always be there to protect them. Jessica believes that these experiences led Aiden to seek out friendships with people who would accept her. But they weren't always people that were good for Aiden. And she also began acting out in other ways, running away and experimenting with substances.
So Aiden was drinking a lot, and she was getting into situations where she would drink, and I would get phone calls from the police or from the hospital saying that she had been beat up. And so I'd have to go to Seattle or various cities to like pick her up in the middle of the night because she wasn't where she said she was going to be, and she'd gotten in a bad situation. And so I'd have to go and pick her up. And then the towns that she would be in were just more dangerous. And then I said, can't just be alcohol fueling this. And she was in some sort of a rage one day. And she told me, no, I don't do alcohol. I do fucking meth, is what the exact words were.
It was during these years that Aiden's aunt Courtney wasn't around much. She was out of state attending college, but made it home for holidays and other family events. It was at the wedding of another family member that she saw signs herself that Aiden was slipping down a dangerous path.
At my sister's wedding, my other sister, not Jessica, not Aiden's mom, but at my sister's wedding in 2016, Aiden came, and I remember she started opening up to me about different drugs and things that she had tried. And I remember thinking, this is so far opposite of the person that I thought that I knew. I didn't think she had tried any of that. And that's not surprising for a teenager, right? To like try alcohol or maybe try smoking weed or something like that. But I think just from my upbringing and how I grew up, I was so far opposite of that. I was always very concerned with school and grades and the activities and sports I was involved in. It never occurred to me to go to a party in high school or drink in high school or anything like that. So hearing that from her, I was kind of like, you know, that's not cool, Aiden. That's not where you want to be. That's not what you want to do. You want to make sure that you finish high school and you are on a path to success, basically. And I just really distinctly remember that conversation. But I just remember feeling kind of sad for that, being like, oh, I really didn't know. She was talking about this in a way, like trying alcohol and smoking and things like that. She was talking about it in a way that was almost like she felt really cool, or she felt like that made her have an edge or something like that. Aiden was always really sweet. She was a sweet child. She seemed like a very sweet teenager. In fact, when my parents had told me she came to live with us for a year, or live with my parents, and I was visiting for the summer, and she came to live with them, and my parents had said, well, we think she might have taken some alcohol from our cabinet. And, you know, we think she threw up downstairs in the bedroom. And I remember this distinctly because they had said, Aiden said the dog threw up or got sick. And my parents were like, it was clearly not from a dog. And I was like, well, are you sure it was her? Because I can't see her doing anything like that. And it wasn't until my sister's wedding that I was like, oh, okay, there is this other side to her. And there is this other side where she has some, I guess, maybe interests, or she feels that this is a way to experiment or to make herself feel worthy and have value.
Jessica was doing everything she could to turn things around for Aiden, but nothing seemed to help. Jessica believes that Aiden had some sort of underlying mental health issues. Jessica tried to get Aiden a diagnosis and treatment, but was met with roadblocks due to medical privacy laws.
I thought that she had some mental illness issues. They run in her father's side of the family. But in Washington State, at the age of 13, kids don't have to tell their parents what the doctor says. They don't have to see a doctor if they don't want. That's not even a joke. I remember I thought she was on something one day, and so I made her go to the ER with me, and we sat in the ER, and she was just in this rage that I've never seen. And I said, I think there's some mental illness issues, but I also think she's on drugs, and they tested her for drugs. And we went in a room with a social worker. And so I said, you know, like, what did she test positive for? And she said, I'm really sorry, she doesn't want me to tell you. And I was like, excuse me? And that's when I found out that at 13 years old, they don't have to tell me anything. And that social worker, because I was like, just in tears, because I didn't know what to do. And I said, obviously, it's worse than marijuana. And she just kind of looked at me, and I said, is it meth? And she's like, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong, but I can't answer that question. And that's how I knew for sure. I just wanted to save her somehow. And I did everything I could. I contacted a rehab place in Oregon that agreed they were going to come and like kidnap her. And they did. And they said, as soon as we have her in the car, she's in our custody, and she went to Oregon for rehab. And she was really mad at me for like the first 2 weeks and wouldn't talk to me. And the counselor told her that you're never going to get out of here if you don't make some progress in our counseling sessions. And just like that, Aiden's whole attitude was like, I love you, mommy. I miss you. Whatever she said, whatever she had to say to get out. And within a week, she was back on the street. Nobody would help me. I called CPS for help, for God's sake. I tried everything. They gave me a bunch of resources, and they were going to set up a CHINS petition. It's like an at-risk youth petition. So basically, our rules at our house would be enforced as laws. And so I was like, okay, great. So I went and I filed that, and then Aiden ran away from home. And she had to appear in court for this to be executed. And she had to be explained all of the rules, and Aiden ran away. And so there was just basically not, my hands were just so tied that even things that I thought were going to be something to relieve our situation ended up not being.
Jessica was desperate. Just like any parent, she only wanted the best for her daughter and knew she had a bright future ahead of her if only she could turn things around. But Jessica felt helpless in this situation. Jessica explained that at one point during Aiden's teen years, she was raped, and Jessica believes that trauma impacted her daughter deeply and caused her to turn to substances to ease the pain.
She was sexually assaulted. We went to the police. They knew who did it, but when it came time for her to testify, she said she didn't want to, and he got let off. And at about the time she turned 17, all of the friends that were good influences on her distanced themselves from her. Because she was hanging out with really bad kids. Like one time, I remember she got caught shoplifting with a girl. And so obviously, like being a mom, I wanted to go and talk to that girl's parents. And her parents just didn't care. So I thought she was so out of control and I didn't know what to do. So I called Child Protective Services to see if they had any resources for me. And they said that that girl who Aiden had been hanging out with and shoplifting was under suspicion of luring girls for her older boyfriends for sex trafficking. And that was the girl that Aiden was with when she was raped. So she just really got in this really dangerous crowd.
It was also around this time that Jessica and Jeannie were becoming closer. Jeannie witnessed Jessica's desperate battle to save Aiden.
As she got older, they lived in Tacoma in an area that kind of had like some, I don't know, bad social settings. So like drug use and just kids who are up to no good kind of does have a reputation for crime, poverty. It was pretty clear to Jessica and I both that she was struggling. And then with her being in public schools in Tacoma, I think that she started to have some bad influences. And while Jessica never got like a diagnosis for Aiden, we do think that there was some kind of underlying mental illness based on, you know, her moods and the way she would act and react to certain things. So, you know, kind of once she got into high school, it seems like she started hanging around with the wrong crowd. And then combine the underlying issues with drug use, and it just kind of spiraled out of control from there. Jessica was telling me about those times and how difficult it was for Jessica to do anything effectively to help Aiden. I hate to say this because it sounds bad, but I think she might have been very impressionable and more of a follower than a leader. So like if she had peers that were making bad decisions, I don't know that she necessarily would have been like, no, I'm not doing it because it's wrong. I think she would have just gone along with it.
Things seemed to come to a head when their home was burglarized and they learned that Aiden was behind it.
When she robbed us, she was 16, almost 17 years old, and she was at home. And she kept calling me all day. And it was weird that she was just calling me, kind of checking where I was, when I was going to be home. And we came home and didn't really realize immediately, because she only took things upstairs in my husband and I's room. And she didn't take anything like from her brother or anything. It was just our electronics. And so it wasn't like immediately known that she had robbed us. And when we found out, I said, this is just too weird. I said, I need you to stay and talk to the police. And she left, swearing that she didn't have anyone in the house. And then I said, well, the neighbor saw that a guy that they know from high school was in the house, and I'm telling the police. And then she called me a snitch and all kinds of other things. And she ended up staying with a distant family member who was harboring her and telling us that she didn't know where Aiden was.
Jessica knew that Aiden had stolen from them to feed her addiction, which seemed to be progressing. Jessica was frank with us and explained that she didn't even realize how bad things were until after Aiden ultimately disappeared.
Aiden got addicted to methamphetamines and heroin, and finding things out after she'd been reported missing, I guess she was really into fentanyl and heroin. She did not start with heroin. She started, I believe, with cocaine. I think it was like marijuana a little bit in high school, and then it went to cocaine. And I'm only assuming cocaine just because once she robbed our house and the guy that she was with was identified by a neighbor across the street saying that this guy was a big coke dealer at their high school. So that's the only reason I assume that. But I know that meth came fairly quickly after that.
Jessica was fighting an uphill battle that every parent of a teenager fears. They had a younger child in the home, and this was not a good home environment with the burglary and drug use. Aiden knew that she was always welcome to come home, but she needed to do the work. She had to seek treatment for her addiction. Jeannie watched as all of this unfolded during Aiden's teen years and supported Jessica the best that she could.
That was kind of a pivotal point, too, in Jessica and Aiden's relationship because, you know, at that point, it's just untenable. Like, she can't have drug users in her home stealing her things and it's impacting her younger son. So, Jessica, it's hard because I think she might be vilified in this because I think a lot of people see it as like, oh, you know, you could have done more or you should have forced her to do things. But it wasn't for lack of trying. She tried her best to get her help. And, you know, because Aiden was of a certain age, there was really nothing that she could do to force her to seek help or even see a doctor. Or when she would, it's not like the doctors could even share the information that was that Aiden was sharing with them. So it was just a really tough situation. You know, she was hanging around with men who were significantly older than her, like they're our age, like mine and Jessica's age. And I mean, she was so young. She's a baby. She's not like a hardened criminal, but she's hanging out with people who are. So I think that that too just added to just everything that led up to her disappearance. Aiden always had an invitation to come home, but that was only if she were to seek treatment. It completely changed her as a person.
In those years that followed, before Aiden vanished in early 2022, Jessica always held out hope that she would decide it was time for a change. Aiden was essentially homeless on the streets of Tacoma, drifting around and using drugs.
She talked to me. She never asked me for money or anything, ever. Sometimes she'd call me and be like, I am so hungry. Can you come and take me to eat? And I'd be like, sure. And I would take her to eat, but it was never like, can I have some money? Which was like different from anything anyone told me because everyone's like, well, just don't give her money and enable her. And I'm like, she doesn't ever ask me for money. When she left home, she probably weighed about 180 pounds, a size 14, 16 clothes. And the last time I saw her, we went to the Goodwill and I got some clothes and I had to buy her a size one. She's like a quarter of the person that she used to be.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. J- Jessica hoped that maybe Aiden would hit rock bottom or get sick of living on the streets. Jessica made it clear to Aiden that anytime she was willing to enter a treatment facility, Jessica would make it happen for her. And that is exactly what happened in January of 2022. At this point, Aiden was now 21 years old and had been living on the streets for a number of years, but she seemed ready, finally.
The last time that I physically saw her was the 21st of January. She called me a couple days before that, and she told me that she wanted her birth certificate and her social security card because some guy was going to help her get an ID. The whole time she's been homeless, I've kept her social security card and her birth certificate in hopes that maybe she'd turn her life around and not screw up her credit in the process. So she asked for those things. I said, no, you know, we're not going to give those things to this random Clyde guy, but I will take you and I will get everything that you need to get your ID card. So I picked her up and we went and had lunch. And I was just like, I really hate seeing you like this. I said, you are my beautiful girl. I was like, you just need to go to rehab. I said that you can't live your life like this forever. I said, your organs aren't meant to run like this. You're tired. You're living on the streets. And I'm just like telling her all these things. She's like, I know. I was seriously talking to someone about this the other day that I can't keep doing this. And I want to go to rehab. And she's like, I'm seriously considering it. And I'm like, okay. And we went and got her school transcripts and went to the Department of Licensing, but COVID was still going on so much that we had to make an appointment. So at that point, I said, well, why don't you just stay with me and we'll go Monday? And she said she was having really bad withdrawals and I needed to drop her off. And so I did. When I was going to drop her off, I said, okay, I want you to call me anytime this weekend, Monday for sure. We'll go and we'll get your ID so you can get a job. And I was like, but if you decide to go to rehab, I will get that completely set up for you and I'll get you off on Monday. And she is like, really? And I'm like, absolutely. Cause she's still on our insurance. So she can literally, she doesn't have to wait in line like other people do. She can literally, I could have her on a plane the same day to go anywhere she wants. And so I said, so you let me know if you're serious and I will make it happen.
In the days that followed, Aiden was seriously considering taking Jessica up on her offer. On the 24th, Jessica was thrilled to hear from Aiden that this time she was really ready to go.
Monday morning at 7:30, she texts me and she said, I don't know what it is about today. I woke up and I just have this feeling. It is such a good feeling. I want my life back. I want to go to rehab. I was hoping for this, so I kind of had already reached out to some places and there was a beautiful spa in Dallas, Texas, and it used to be a Neiman Marcus. So it was like a luxury spa that Neiman Marcus used to own that is now turned into a rehab facility. And so I showed her a whole bunch and one of them was in Vegas. She's like, I just don't feel like it's very healthy for me to be in Vegas. She was so on board with this. So I'm like, okay, I sent her the pictures of Dallas and she's like, oh my gosh. And my sister lives down there. So I was like, Aunt Courtney's down there. I was like, I'll come visit you. And she's like, yeah, I want to do this. We didn't have an ID. I contacted the airline and I explained the situation. They're like, we'll get her on a plane. Don't worry. So everything was falling into place. We were going to meet at 11 o'clock in the morning. I had already talked to the intake people, but she's 21. So she has to talk to them and confirm all of this. So we were going to meet to do that and then shop for some clothes and some stuff so she can go to rehab.
Jessica was extremely excited and hopeful that this would be what she had been waiting for years. That Aiden was finally ready to take the first steps towards sobriety and seek the treatment she so desperately needed. It all seemed so close. But then, Jessica got a message from Aiden and her heart sank.
We're meeting at 11. She messages me at 10:30 and she said, Mom, Mommy, she always calls me Mommy. I know we're supposed to meet really soon. I have to go and say goodbye to somebody. I'm still coming today. Don't be upset with me. I'm still coming today. But it just has to be a little later because I have to say goodbye to this person. And I'm like, are you serious, Aiden? I'm like, just I'll come get you. So I tried to like talk her out of it. I'll come get you. I'll take you to say goodbye to whoever. I won't judge. I'll take you and you can say goodbye. And she's like, Mom, I promise I'll call you later. And so no call later. And so I was really frustrated. And so I messaged her and I said, obviously, you aren't serious about this yet. These people are not your friends. These people will fucking kill you over drugs, is what I said to her. Here's the number for who I called for rehab. I need you to call when you're ready. And I'll still do everything else, but you need to make the first call to this person. And she read the message and never replied. And I've never seen her again. The 25th was the last message I sent her that she read, or possibly heard.
Jessica never heard from Aiden again. She assumed that she was laying low because she knew how disappointed Jessica would be. Aiden had gotten her hopes up and then let her down. Aiden didn't have a cell phone, which made tracking her down difficult. Jessica explained to us that she would log into her Facebook account from other people's devices to send messages to her family and friends. This made things difficult for Jessica, but she had ways of finding Aiden that had worked in the past.
Aiden, anytime I bought her a cell phone, it was stolen within a week. So she never had anything consistently because of the lifestyle that she lived. But I've never gone a long time without talking to her. And there'd been times where it'd been like several weeks and I would get worried. And so I would drive to, there's this stretch of street in Tacoma called Hosmer Street. And that's where most of the drug activity is. Most of the murders are, sex trafficking. I mean, you name it, it's on that street. And I would go on that street and I would ask if they knew Aiden and if they knew where she was. And I'm not even kidding. Every single time I would get a call, she'd show up at my house. I woke up one morning to a note on my car from her. Don't worry, Mom, I'm okay. I'll call you later. And she always did. That is the only way that she communicated was through Facebook Messenger.
Jessica was always able to get a hold of Aiden in the past, but this time things were different. Days and then weeks passed with no word from Aiden. When Jessica heard from one of Aiden's close friends, she was alarmed to hear what the friend had to say.
I didn't file the missing person report until February because this isn't unusual for me to not talk to her for a month, maybe month and a half. So I was just like, oh, she's just out and she's going to call me. And so I really wasn't worried. So I learned that one of her friends that she was with every day, this girl talked to Aiden every day. Aiden used to date her brother who passed away from a drug overdose. And Aiden remained friends with this girl and they were on the streets and they were together every single day. And this girl messages me and she's like, hey, how's Aiden doing in rehab? And I was like, what? Aiden didn't go to rehab. She's like, yeah, she did. She's like, everyone told me she's been in rehab. I haven't seen her in like a month and she's been in rehab. And I'm like, Aiden didn't go to rehab. Are you being serious? You haven't seen her in a month? And she's like, no. Her boyfriend hasn't seen her in a month. No one has seen her in a month. And I'm like, yeah, right. And she, I think, ended up pulling up a message that was sent to her from Aiden, and it was a month ago. And so I'm like, oh my God. And so I called her in missing. And at that point, yeah, I was pretty worried at that point. And then the more and more stuff came out, it was just, it's been an absolute nightmare. It was that phone call that I knew somebody who sees her on a daily basis and every other day basis has not seen her. And a boyfriend that she had seen every single day was claiming to have not seen her either.
After reporting Aiden missing to the Pierce County Sheriff's Office, Jessica called her sister Courtney, who lives out of state but is a journalist, and asked if she could help.
My sister called me. And she told me that she hadn't heard from Aiden in a while and that sometimes that wasn't unusual, that Aiden would maybe not go missing, but she wouldn't hear from her for a couple weeks to maybe a month if she was living on the streets. And my sister told me that she had let her know, you can always come home, I'll always come pick you up. But Aiden didn't always have access to a phone or an iPad or computer, so she said she didn't think it was that unusual. However, the last time she spoke with her was on January 24th, And that morning, she had agreed to go to rehab. She said she wanted to get clean and she wanted to change her life. And she was tired of what she was involved in and what she was doing. And so they had agreed to meet at noon. And then Aiden never showed up. So my sister, she was telling me about it. And so I said, well, who did you report it? Did you file a missing persons report? She let me know that she filed that police report. And I was just kind of brainstorming what I could do or what resources I could reach out to or look into any anti-human trafficking nonprofits up in the area that may have heard the missing indigenous. So I reached out to them. I believe that they wrote me back an email sending me some resources, people that I could call. It wasn't anything super helpful. I mean, it was good to have the resources. It just wasn't, they didn't have any leads on, or they hadn't heard of her. They weren't sure, but they did eventually email me back, I think after like a week.
After realizing that Aiden was actually missing, they started looking at those closest to Aiden. Earlier, Jessica mentioned that Aiden had a boyfriend. His name is Dre, and he was abusive to Aiden.
Dre, I have witnessed him being abusive to Aiden. Aiden's boyfriend has been adamant the whole time, like, no way, I would have never done anything like this. But a lot of people said that he'd been acting weird, he changed his appearance, got rid of his car, all this stuff.
Jessica was able to gain access to Aiden's social media after she disappeared, because Aiden's sign-in information was saved on a friend's device. Reading through Aiden's messages shed some light on the relationship she shared with Dre, which was upsetting for Jessica.
Dre, her boyfriend, he didn't start messaging her until late February, and then he messaged a few times begging for her back, which stopped at about March 3rd. But they had never corresponded on Facebook, and many of her messages were saying how Dre hits her and how abusive he is, and he would throw her clothes out of the car so she wouldn't have anything, and it was just really sad to read. And so it was horrible. I mean, I think that I knew it in my head. I knew that he was abusive. She had told me that before, but like to read these messages, there's not a ton of detail, but there is detail about like what he's done to her, and where someone will be like, your lip was so fat when I just saw you, or something like that. And it was really hard to just read what she went through. And I mean, and essentially, I guess, sought out, because the day she went missing, that's who she wanted to meet when she said she had to say goodbye to somebody and that she would meet me later.
In any case, the significant other is always looked at, and the history of abuse is a red flag. Did Aiden go meet with Dre? And he did something that stopped Aiden from meeting up with Jessica to go to rehab. Clearly, Dre is someone we hope that the police look into thoroughly. But Jessica isn't convinced he's the person who made her daughter disappear. Jessica told us about another man she learned about, who she had never heard of before Aiden went missing.
This is an odd little twist. So, when Aiden went missing, you know, immediately I started hearing like horror stories of this could have happened and whatever. So this lady messages me in the middle of the night and she said, I know Aiden, I'm her street mom. And this guy just called me and said that she's in Portland with a guy named Patrick Detweiler and she's going to call me when she gets out of the shower. And I was like, you're full of shit. Don't call me again. And so I'm telling my best friend, you know, this lady's just calling me and this Patrick Detweiler guy, and that just sounds like an actor, and who, you know, like, I'm just like, this is bullshit. And so we do some digging and we find a real guy named Patrick Detweiler. I start like just kind of looking into him, and then I messaged him and I said, hey, somebody told me that you knew my daughter, and I'm just, you know, I'm really curious as to like your relationship with her. So he told me this huge long story, how Aiden and her boyfriend robbed him, and because Aiden's boyfriend found out that they were sleeping together and she might be pregnant with his baby, and he was in love with her. And ever since I started talking to him, he used her. He talked about her in the past tense. that wasn't initially alarming because his texts are pretty illiterate and kind of have to be deciphered. And so I wasn't too concerned at that point. He seemed to be offering a lot of information, and he started really pointing the finger at Aiden's boyfriend, Dre, who was an easy suspect for me. And so I told the detectives what this guy said. And so Patrick tells me this elaborate story about how Dre finds out about them, Dre's boyfriend, finds out about her and Patrick's relationship and is livid and convinces Aiden to help rob Patrick. And so they robbed him of $5,000 and fentanyl pills, and he called them blacks. I guess that's heroin. So he is saying blues and blacks, and I did the little research and found out blue was fentanyl. So Patrick says that they came to his trailer and they robbed him, Aiden and Dre. And somehow, in the commission of this robbery, Dre leaves his car keys with Patrick, and then some other guy swoops in and steals the car keys. Like, the story was very elaborate. And so I'm kind of like, gosh, this just doesn't sound right. And he's just like, I just loved your daughter so much. Like, she was such a special person. And I said, well, do you have any communications with Aiden that you could share with me? And he's like, oh, yeah, I have all these messages. And then he messaged me back a few minutes later, like, oh, I don't even know what happened. It's like I never even knew her. All the messages are deleted. And I was like, what? At that point, I didn't think very much because he was still being like really forthcoming to me. And then his story started getting really weird. And he went through Aiden's Facebook and he started commenting on her posts. Like, he had never commented before, but now he's commenting like, I love you so much. And I know that you love me, and like all this stuff. And it's just like he's going over the top to make himself be a presence in her life. Another thing with Aiden is that we're, even though she was on the street, like, we talked a lot, and she is very open with me with what she was doing and who she was hanging out with and her boyfriend. And I'm like, and it just was never you. The funny thing is I dislike Dre so much that she probably would have been really happy to tell me that Dre was gone. So I said, so just do me a favor. I said, look back through everything you have, like in cell phones or anything. I just want to see one message from Aiden to you proving that she ever even spoke to you. And he told me, I'm not going to sit here and get accused of hurting your daughter. I'm calling a lawyer. And he hasn't talked to me since.
While searching for Aiden, they learned that at the time she disappeared, Patrick was living in a camper near the old airport in Tacoma. And several people have pointed to him as being the last person to see Aiden alive. In a strange twist of events, Patrick claimed to know where Aiden's body could be found, and the police conducted a search to see if they could find her.
He messaged the detectives. He told the police he knows exactly where my daughter is dumped. He has had them go and search this abandoned airport in manholes four different times. They've been there with cadaver dogs, and they find nothing. So it's just odd to me that someone that has nothing to do with it is giving like pretty detailed information of where he thinks she is. But the old airport is so big, it's 43 square blocks. So they haven't searched at all at this point, obviously. Patrick eventually blocks me from social media because I shared Aiden's missing flyer and tagged him in it and said that he was a person that I'd like to talk. I want him to talk to the police. And so he blocked me on social media, and my friend decided one morning to pull his criminal record. And so she pulls his criminal record and finds all kinds of stuff. Yeah, one of his charges was he pulled guns on kids at a park trying to rob them for their bike.
Jeannie has pulled court records for Patrick's previous criminal charges, and they detail a history of both delusional and violent behavior. In their research, they found a woman who knew Patrick and had been conversing with him via text message around the time Aiden went missing. They asked that woman to look back at those messages, and she noticed something strange.
He, like, disappears off the face of the earth after telling me that he knows exactly where my daughter is dumped. In the text messages, So the last time that Aiden spoke to me was on January 24th. And on January 24th, he sends this lady a message and says that things are going really bad and he has to leave Washington. And 4 days later, she messaged him and he said he was already gone. And he's the only one. Aiden's boyfriend has gone in and talked to the police and they said they kind of believe his story, but they're not ruling him out as a suspect, but he came in and at least talked to them. And this guy has not talked to them at all, but he tells everyone that he did.
Just for clarification, Jessica mentioned earlier that this man told the police that they could find Aiden's body at the old airport, which prompted a search for Aiden. Jessica told us that that tip was called in and left as a long, detailed message to an investigator. When police attempted to follow up with Patrick, he refused to take their calls. Jessica explained that Patrick has made strange statements to others who felt that it was serious enough to call authorities.
Another person from Oregon, where he went to, called detectives because they were so afraid because Patrick had told them so much information. And at first he thought that they were just rambling. And so he came home and he looked Aiden up. And sure enough, Aiden was missing, just like he said. And it freaked him out so bad that he called detectives. And he's like, this guy had something to do with it. Patrick said that he had to go away because someone was going to come up missing and he would be framed for it.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Earlier, we discussed how Jessica was able to access Aiden's social media because a friend still had Aiden's login information saved in her device. Jessica has pored over all of Aiden's last communications to try to find a clue that points in any one direction.
According to her messages, she had every intention of meeting. She told the last person that she talked to, she messaged, his name's Michael Moore, she messaged him looking for Dre. She was messaging everyone looking for Dre. She tells him that she's going to go to rehab. And then she was supposed to meet someone else after meeting up with him. She told him it has to be fast because I have to meet my mom. I'm going to rehab. So she had every intention of meeting up with me. So that was also really hard to read because I think it was like easier if I felt like maybe she just relapsed again and was avoiding me. but like reading that she really did want to go to rehab. She's going to meet me after she said goodbye to this person. In her last message, she says, "Are you with Dre?" And he said, "No." And then she said, "I'm going to go to rehab. I just want to say goodbye to him." And he says, "Do you have any pills?" She said, "I'm about to." And he says, "Well, I need some." And then she told him to meet her at the Howard Johnson on Hosmer Street. Then I drove by yesterday because I was going to stop in and see if they recognized her at all, because a lot of the conversations were her staying there. But it's boarded up and you can't get into it now because there's been so much crime there. It's a really notorious hotel in a really bad area. This one in particular was just notorious for, crime, like murders, prostitution, drugs, all hours of the day and night. It was just going on. And so when I drove there yesterday, I wasn't too surprised to see that it was one of the ones that they had boarded up. But I saw exactly like the view that she had. She said like exactly where her room was. So I saw all of that yesterday, and that was kind of hard too. I talked to the detective, and because Michael Moore has a warrant out for his arrest right now for a different crime. And so I talked to the detective and was like, "Well, can you, on this, you can question him, right?" And he said that he's on his radar, but they can't find him. He's like dodging the police. And he is friends with Dre, which is confirmed. The girl that gave me Aiden's password, she said she's best friends with Michael Moore. And so I asked if Dre was friends with him also. And she said, yes, they're good friends. So Aiden was looking for Dre and ends up seeing this guy. And that was the last communication from her ever.
Aiden's messages yielded yet another clue when Jessica found a cryptic note from a friend that pointed back to that man named Patrick.
I got a message in Aiden's messenger. This girl messages and says that she shouldn't have left her at Patrick's that day. And like, basically, I'm just messaging you just because it feels right. And I know you're never going to see this. And telling her to save a spot for her up there and tell Curly, which is Aiden's ex-boyfriend that died of an overdose, tell him I said hi and I'll see you when I get there. So like, that to me sounded like somebody that knew something. So I messaged her and I just screenshotted that message. And I was like, "Hey, I just read this and I'm just wondering if I can ask you some questions." And it took her a couple of days to get back to me, but she did. And she told me this story of like her and Aiden and Patrick, and I think Dre, were at Patrick's trailer. And she wanted Aiden to leave, and Patrick got aggressive with Aiden, which I wasn't aware of. And she said that they ended up taking Aiden with Dre's aunt, and they took her towards Spokane. And when they came back, they weren't with her. And they both started talking about her in the past tense, like saying, "I don't know, maybe she ran off with him. I don't know." And it was just like a past tense thing, because I guess Patrick commented on one of my posts and this girl was like, "How dare you comment on this?" Whatever. So she's still saying like Dre and Patrick. Her dates were very close. Like, I was just asking off the top of her head, you know, around what date do you think it is? I know it's been a long time, but can you like think about what date? And she was like within a couple of days of the last time that Aiden was seen.
Another theory in this case is that Aiden was harmed by a stranger or acquaintance that she had met through sex work. Jessica had suspicions that Aiden had turned to sex work to pay for drugs, but it wasn't something she really wanted to believe or come to terms with.
She, one time when she was high, or I think coming down, because she was always really nice when she was high, and then she'd come down and then you'd see a whole different person. She was screaming at me that she prostituted. And then one time she FaceTimed me, and we were talking, and I could see in the background, I don't think she realized the angle. And I was like, "Why is there an old man in that bed?" I'm like, "Aiden, what the hell?" And she hung up on me. My mom knows a guy that he used to be in the cartel when he was younger, and then he turned into a police officer who was a detective. And so my mom was talking to him, and he said that basically, like, if the cartel has her and is sex trafficking her, you'll never see her again because they'll just kill her when they're done. And so that was concerning because that was another rumor that circulated. So many rumors have circulated.
Jessica's sister Courtney has been helping her dig through Aiden's social media accounts, thinking a second set of eyes might see something she overlooked. Courtney told us that it was clear to her that Aiden was more deeply involved in sex work than she wanted to believe.
So I went through some messages and it's all very similar, right? So it's, you know, whenever she could access a phone or an iPad, it's Aiden setting up dates or asking for blues or blacks or getting some clear, which is all playing, of course. I don't think that she had anybody that was coercing her necessarily. I think that she was doing what she felt she needed to do to make money to get the next fix. That was really, really apparent. And it was really sad because I know that at any point, Jessica said she told her she could come home. She could always call her. And my sister said she would always go pick her up if she needed to. But I just don't think that Aiden felt that she could come home in that state. And I don't know if it was because she was embarrassed or she felt like she was disappointing her family or that she knew she was making these choices and action and, you know, doing things that she knew her family doesn't really approve of. But Aiden, it was so eye-opening and really sad and depressing for me to see a lot of the messages and see her setting up dates. It's very apparent she was selling sex for drugs. That was just not the person that I knew. And it just was so sad to me to see not only her, but with all the friends and interactions and the messages I did see, that how many people really are kind of a slave to that sort of lifestyle and that kind of just existence, which is really, it seems to me, it's exhausting and it's really sad. And it's sad that she got into that in the first place. There were so many times in those messages and Facebook and things like that I saw Aiden asking, like, do you have any blues? Can I trade you some blues for whatever? Or I'm at the Howard Johnson Hotel. I'm on a date right now, but can you come here and bring me some blues and we can chill and hang out? Or saying, hey, can I borrow a few dollars because I can't pay for my hotel room tonight? Or I'm really cold and I'm on 76th and this street and I'm freezing. Can you please just come pick me up? And then the person responds, yeah, I'll come pick you up, but that ride isn't free. Meaning she's going to trade. And I don't think she was being coerced by a person or by somebody who was telling her, like, you need to make money to help us, or, you know, that boyfriend method of coercion and human trafficking. I don't think it was like that. I think she was electing to do things that she knew could get her enough money. And sometimes, I mean, I saw her tell one person, I can't hook up with you anymore for $50 because that's just not enough. I can't keep seeing you for $50, I think is what it said. $50. That's what she felt like she needed to do to fulfill her addiction. And it's sad. And it makes me feel like I just am really, really sad. And I don't know what happened to her. And I hope that she's still with us. But it just seems very unlike her to not check into her Facebook or to text her mom or to talk to her little brother or to get in touch with anyone. It's really, really heartbreaking. If there was any kind of foul play involved in her disappearance, it's really not evident because there's not really a lot that people or any detectives have brought forth or been able to kind of pin down or find.
Aiden's case is tricky because there are so many different characters who are unreliable. Aiden's lifestyle was high risk, and there are a number of people who could have harmed her. Jessica has tried to establish a good working relationship with the investigator assigned to Aiden's case by reminding him that her daughter is more than the labels that some may put on her, and she deserves to be found.
Law enforcement has not been incredibly helpful in this whole situation. Detectives sent a subpoena to Facebook to gain access to Aiden's Messenger account. the judge granted a warrant to be served to Facebook. But everything he's kind of done, it's just kind of been really slow. And I get it because in Tacoma, crime is up and detectives and police force has been reduced by 50%. Unfortunately, in Tacoma and the Seattle area, the drug and mental health problem is out of control. And there's just not enough resources to help these people. And so this is where we're at. This guy's in charge of a lot of stuff. And I feel like, you know, this is an addict that's gone missing and it happens all the time. There's some people that have been really, really suspicious. And because there is no physical evidence of a crime, they can't make anyone come in and talk. So that's been really hard. And I've said to the detective, and I get quite a different response when I say, look, I know that I bother you a lot, but this is my daughter. I'm like, this is my oldest. I'm having a hard time going on without her. And I said, I just need something. And I said, and I know you have children. And I said, what if it was one of your children? And he's like, I get it. I'm so sorry. He's like, it's not like she's not on my mind. He's like, she is. And I think about my daughters. And he's been very honest with me about like what he would do if he was a parent versus an officer. We have a good rapport. He's like, this is always on my mind. Anytime I hear something new, if it's something I can share with you, he's like, I do. And he said that anything he was able to share at that point, he has. But please don't think that I'm not working because you don't know everything. I just can't tell you everything.
Jessica acknowledges that there are many possible outcomes in her daughter's case, and she doesn't know what to think or who to believe.
Part of me thinks that it was an overdose and that people panicked. Another part of me thinks that maybe she was going to be with Dre and Patrick freaked out. And then another part of me who has seen Dre be violent with her and like I've had to intervene, I feel like maybe he said, no, you're not going to rehab. So I feel like there's so many different scenarios. I believe Patrick has something to do with it. And I feel like it was an overdose. And I feel like she overdosed and he panicked because he admitted to me that he sold drugs and he sold them to her. Somebody told the detective that he was exchanging drugs for sex with Aiden. And so I think that might be what happened. And he got a bad batch of fentanyl, gave it to Aiden, and she died, and he panicked and disposed of her. It's really hard to say out loud, but like at first you couldn't have said that. My mom would say to me like immediately, like, Jessica, I just have a bad feeling that she's not here anymore. And I would get so upset. And I just figured she would call me or something would happen by now. I'm at 264 days since the last time I talked to her. And I've never not talked to her this long in her whole entire life. It's like hard to say all of these things about her, like her drug use and stuff, because like really, she was so much more than that. You know, telling you this and all these events, it's like, these are real events that led up to this, but like, that's not who she was. Or like, even if you would run into her and she was high out in the street, like she's still just a loving, kind person that everybody loved.
Courtney has been doing everything she can to help her sister find Aiden. She has talked to many of Aiden's friends and acquaintances to see if she could get to the bottom of things. But she's been left feeling frustrated by all of the stories and rumors that don't quite add up.
We keep getting these stories from several different supposed witnesses or friends or former friends that their stories aren't cohesive. They're not making any sense. And so it's just kind of this endless circle. And the thing that's so sad about that is that if something did happen to her and if she isn't with us anymore, then the best thing in this case would be to have some closure. And I think my sister deserves that and our family deserves that. But again, that's just something we don't know what's going to happen. And it makes me really sad because I didn't know Aiden that well in her since she was 16, and she's 22 now. She turned 22 July 5th, and she wasn't around for that. Aiden was as lost as anybody could be lost. and she was not making decisions in her best interest. And I don't think she had the capacity to do that in the state that she was in. And it's just really sad. Even though Aiden isn't a white girl with blonde hair and she's not a college student, she's a drug addict living on the streets of Tacoma. And there's no way around that. But she still matters. And she still matters to the people that love her and to her family. It's just sad that seemingly her name will be lost because it's just like nobody cares.
Jeannie has watched Jessica go through the nightmare of having a teenager slip into addiction to now having her disappear altogether. She is determined to keep helping Jessica push for answers as long as it takes to find Aiden.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of her feelings kind of at the beginning were just like, she's going to pop up, she'll turn up, it's not that concerning, just given her lifestyle. But then once it got to the point that like Aiden's best friend was like, well, we were told she was in rehab, you know, stories started coming out that just didn't make a lot of sense. Because if Aiden had gone to rehab, Jessica would have put her there, right? So at first, I think it was just confusion and doubt that anything was actually really wrong. But then, like, if we were to talk about Jessica's state of mind today, it's very different. Like, I think there's a lot of guilt, there's a lot of anger, confusion, and she kind of goes back and forth between questioning whether her daughter could still be alive, questioning if she's dead, or whether we'll ever find out what happened to her. I mean, it's a daily struggle. It changes from day to day, moment to moment. I mean, there's times where she's convinced that her daughter is no longer alive. And she's in despair because she knows she's never going to see her again. And then there's moments where she flips back and she's like, maybe she's still alive. I have hope. So it's just really heart-wrenching to watch my best friend go through that. Even though Aiden had problems, she's still a human being and we love her and we need to know what happened to her. She's obviously going through something that most of us never will, right? And I think that the way people handle grief is obviously very different. And this isn't something that she knows how to handle. And I think it's just hard because, you know, she's my friend. So like, I don't necessarily think that I have advice that would apply to like anyone across the board other than what I know that I could do for her, which is to be there and not stop, you know, giving my time and effort into finding out where her daughter is. So really the only thing that I can do is to continue to tell her that we're not going to stop. Well, you know, back in April, Aiden was featured on the news because there had been such a recent string of crimes down on Hosmer. And then, you know, they contacted Jessica and Aiden was kind of portrayed very quickly. But then like after that, I mean, you see almost every single day there's cases on Hosmer where somebody's shot or a body's dumped or robberies, just all kinds of craziness. We just want attention brought to Aiden's case because she's important. We can't live the rest of our lives not knowing what happened to her. I just can't even fathom for Jessica, like her living the rest of her life without knowing where Aiden is. I mean, it's devastating. And I just don't think that it's something she can or should have to do. And I can't fathom like what it's going to look like if we can never find her. Kind of one of the things that I worry about is, you know, the people that she was hanging around, these aren't criminal masterminds. They don't have resources. People know what happened to her. And I think with the right amount of effort and pressure, information's going to come out and we're going to find her. So I just honestly, in my heart, believe that with enough pressure, effort, and attention, we're going to find out. And I think that the more time that passes, the less likely that becomes because, you know, people, you know, won't talk about it as much, or it will become more of a distant memory to them. But like right now, like I guarantee you, everybody that knew her in that homeless community is talking about it and people know what happened.
Hearing Jessica speak about her daughter and the lengths she went to save her before she disappeared and now find her, you can hear the strength in her voice. But she also admits that none of this is easy for her. But she tries to remain as strong as she can for Aiden.
I have days that are really good, and I'm heavily medicated because of this. I'm on Lexapro because I didn't know how I was going to make it for a little while. It is wild. I am I'm a real estate agent. That's my career, and I basically it's like hard to talk to people, and I hear that people in my office because I have some really good friends that are like, yeah, people just don't know like what to say when you're around, and And so, I tell him, like, don't, she's just be normal. That's what she needs, is for you to just be normal. Because people are just like, I'm an awkward person in the room now, because they're like, what do I do? It's the weirdest time right now in anything, I think. But so I stay home a lot more than I normally did. I work from home more than ever. And I just try and kind of avoid people, because I don't want people, like, sometimes I am not able to talk about it, just depending on what kind of day I'm having.
So what happened to Aiden Spear on that January day when she was supposed to meet her mom, so that she could enter a rehab program and hopefully get a fresh start in life? Aiden said in her messages that she had to say goodbye to someone first, and Jessica believes that she was trying to track down her boyfriend Dre to say bye before leaving for rehab. We know that Dre has a history of abusing Aiden, but Jessica and law enforcement believe he has been mostly forthcoming. Then there was another man that she was messaging with, and it sounded like she was going to meet him for some sort of drug exchange. Could he have had a hand in what happened to Aiden, or no more? He's been difficult to track down due to his own legal troubles unrelated to Aiden. Could Aiden have been seeking just one last fix before going to rehab and took too much? And what about this Patrick guy who seems to have inserted himself into the case in a strange way, claiming to know where Aiden's body was and then leaving the area quickly? Does he know more, or are these just drug-fueled stories? And then there's another possibility altogether, that Aiden could have met with an unknown client for sex work, possibly a complete stranger, and no one has made the connection yet. There's no shortage of shady characters in Aiden's case. Everyone seems to have something to hide, and it may not be that they harmed Aiden, but it makes investigating her disappearance that much more difficult. Jessica is hoping that someone will come forward with a new tip that will help lead them to finding her daughter. If you have any information regarding the disappearance of Aiden Spear, please contact the Pierce County Sheriff's Office at 253-798-7530.
She was obviously trading sex for drugs, and she was on the street in Tacoma. And in the eyes of law enforcement, she was a lost cause to begin with because of what she was involved in. And she's not a lost cause. I mean, we don't know where Aiden is. We don't know what happened to her. We don't know who was involved in how she went missing. But it is not okay that nobody has heard from her in now nearly 10 months, and there's no sign of her. And there are so many rumors, and there are so many stories going around. And it is really, I've talked to a lot of these people, and it is very, very difficult to talk to somebody who is addicted to drugs, because their stories are not consistent. They're incoherent most of the time, and they're not, it just doesn't make any sense.
That brings us to the end of episode 373. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you like our show, please give us a 5-star rating and review. You can also support the show by contributing on Patreon. Be sure to tune in next week. We'll be covering a case from Connecticut. Thanks for listening. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law & Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.